Welcome back to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. We're looking back at 2016 today with Sergio Bustos, senior editor at Politico, Rosemary O'Hara, editorial page editor for the Sun Sentinel, and Mary Marquez, executive editor at El Nuevo Herald. From A to Z now, algae to Zika, with a couple of hurricanes thrown in between here. Florida's environment made some news this year with green algae choking the Treasure Coast, Zika coming to South Florida, and then that 10-year dry streak coming to an end with two hurricanes, including one that held just far enough out in the Atlantic for South Florida to escape anything serious. So let's start in the water. In June, it was blue-green algae washing up on several beaches in Martin and St. Lucie counties. Swimmers were told to stay out of the water for weeks. Most swimmers heeded the advisory issued by county officials over the summertime. And Jensen Beach, Sherry Reedy of Baltimore, was among those staying in the sand.
I was shocked myself. His first day at the beach, and find out there's algae in there. We can't swim, so I'm just going to enjoy the sun, lay out here, and as hard as long as we can, you know.
Soupy, green, guacamole consistency, toxic, and just stinky, nasty stuff, Rosemary Hare. What happened here?
Yeah, what a postcard for Florida tourism.
Not the one that economic development officials would like.
Yeah. Well, you know, these algae blooms happen all over the country. It's not just in Florida. It's not just in the Treasure Coast. And Florida goes from having a drought to having too much water. And in Lake Okeechobee, because of an aging dike, they have to manage the water level. And so they let the water out, and it has filled with nutrients, with phosphorus, with farm runoff, yep, with sewage, and all this stuff that puts yucky stuff in places that it's not supposed to be. It happens every year.
But it happened particularly worse this year because it was a wet spring.
Yes.
So Lake Okeechobee's level was dangerously high. They needed to let the water out, and that meant this dirty water, this gunky water, was getting out into these very environmentally sensitive estuaries, and we saw these algae blooms in the size and the matter that we hadn't seen for many, many years. What about the state's response to it?
Well, the state, you know, already we have tried to limit phosphorus. It's why you can't have phosphorus in your laundry detergent anymore. Today's response is that Senator Negron, the president of the Senate, hopes to spend Amendment 1 money from 2 years ago buying land south of the lake to create more storage and to create more of that natural flow that used to happen. There has to be an alternative than pulling the plug out of the lake and letting this gunky water go create blooms. But I don't know that this year's response to a terrible catastrophe is going to go anywhere because of the politics in Tallahassee.
Miriam?
And I think that the politics of Tallahassee is that if we go back to that first year of Governor Scott, mm-hmm, and what he did, he cut money funding for the water management districts. He devastated them. And in fact, part of the reason that voters came back and said, we need this money on an amendment, was in reaction to these years. And this was, you're right, this wasn't the first time it happened. It happened to him in that second year where there was a huge devastation on, I think it was the intercoastal in that area.
Right.
And so this is what happens when you say, well, we really don't need all these regulations. And we'll see now at the national level what this means under President Trump, because this is the same kind of philosophy.
From algae to Zika now. In July, it was Zika. We were learning all about this disease. First, there were cases that were brought back by people traveling overseas who had gotten bitten by an infected mosquito. But by early August, the Centers for Disease Control issued an unprecedented travel warning for a place inside the United States. We'd never seen anything like this, and it was targeted right on the Wynwood neighborhood of Miami. Governor Rick Scott pledged free testing for pregnant women in Florida. It all contributed to a testing backlog, and money from the federal government was very, very slow to materialize here. Miami-Dade and the state had to dip into reserves to pay millions and millions of dollars for mosquito protection, both on-the-ground spraying and inspection and some aerial spraying as well. We did see, however, a rare show of bipartisan support. Florida Republicans and Democrats alike supported President Obama's request for nearly $2 billion to fund the fight against Zika. Here is South Florida Democratic Representative Ted Deutsch.
It's a public health threat, and it's an economic threat. The last thing that we can afford is for people to decide that they don't want to vacation in Florida because they're concerned about Zika infections.
So eventually we'd see three declared Zika zones in South Florida, Wynwood, Little Haiti, and Miami Beach. They'd all be lifted, but the number of Zika infections continues growing as the year ends. We're up to over 1,200 statewide, including almost 200 pregnant women in Florida. Sammy Mack covered this for us throughout the summertime and fall here for us at WLRN. Sammy, first of all, was the slow initial response, was it finally able to pick up pace, and why? Was it the release of money, or was it the final attention of some of these leaders?
I think it was a combination of those things. It was a fight for months to get federal funding for this, and there are a lot of reasons for that. One is the funding bill that had been proposed had all sorts of riders in it that were absolutely non-starters, including, you know, some issues about Planned Parenthood funding, mm-hmm. also like where you could fly the Confederate flag. There was a lot of stuff packed in there that had nothing to do with preventing the spread of Zika. And the other piece of that too is that there was definitely a feeling when you heard from Florida's lawmakers who worked in D.C. that people in other states for whom this was not as urgent just didn't have that fire lit under them the same way.
So how did the response change as the summer turned into fall, as we saw day after day, week after week, and then eventually a few months of these Zika zones, and the Zika zone expanding, for instance, was the case on Miami Beach?
Well, I think as we started racking up our first 100 and then hundreds and then over 1,000 cases, the urgency even locally kind of changed. There were a lot of squabbles over disclosure at the government level locally, yes. with us as reporters who were trying to get information. The Department of Health was certainly at the Tallahassee level not as forthcoming with all the information as we would have liked to see. We have since heard that they're going to try and change some of that. I am hopeful that when this comes back next year, and by all indications this will come back, that they stick to that, because truly, like, the risk communication here was one of the things that was a learning experience, and not in a great way.
I want to talk a little bit about that, Sergio Bustos. We saw when the Zika zones were lifted, we would see in the media, we'd see press notices coming out for the governor's office 10 or 12 hours beforehand to say the governor's going to be on Miami Beach or in Wynwood for this announcement. And we figured it was going to be lifting of the Zika zone. We didn't see necessarily from the governor, from others, that same kind of real engagement right away in the weeks of July and August. It took several weeks, arguably, for this response to come about. And then, as even Sammy said, a lot of concerns about still disclosure about where Zika-positive mosquitoes were even being found. The health department didn't want to release that information.
It's been very difficult, as it always is with Governor Scott, to get information that he doesn't really want out. And even the Department of Health, as you said, the numbers are always lagging behind. The other problem I saw was over the summer, Governor Scott politicized the event by constantly pointing the finger at the Obama administration and Congress, Republicans in the House.
The inaction in Congress.
For inaction, because right. It dragged on for yeah. months and months yeah. to get that $1.1 billion. They didn't even get the $1.8 billion or right. $2 billion that Obama wanted. So after a while, it got to be a broken record mm-hmm. where Congress wouldn't do anything, and again, Scott would be out there at a news conference or sending out a press release alike. And I also think by telling folks that the Zika zone had been lifted, there's a sense of, oh, we've solved the problem.
Right.
But if you go to the Department of Health website, I mean, there's more than 1,400 cases.
We are still getting notice of cases that have been local transmission, and the lifting of the zone means, you know, the zone itself is defined by this really specific classification of how close together people were, the timeline that they got infected, a couple of other things in there. But it doesn't mean that there isn't transmission. It just means that the cluster has kind of cleared up. And so that has been one of the complaints, too, is that they made it seem like it went away, and it hasn't, and it's not going to. And we've heard from the head of the CDC, we've heard from epidemiologists, from all sorts of tropical health folks, that as long as there is Zika circulating in our hemisphere, this is going to be our problem to deal with.
Zika and the coverage was hyper-focused on Miami-Dade County for good reason. That's where the local transmission was identified. But Rosemary O'Hara, I want to bring you in. There were cases in Broward County and Palm Beach County, and there was some response on the part of local mosquito control officials doing some preventative spraying, for instance. As you looked upon the Miami-Dade experience, what are our neighbors to the north to take away from it?
Well, all eyes were on what was happening in Miami-Dade. What about the aerial spraying? What is it that is being sprayed? How safe is it? You know, getting the water out of your trash can lids and your bromeliads.
Dump and cover.
Yeah. And, you know, the... we knew that around this time of the year that mosquito season is not as great, and so we expected there to be a lull. But here it comes again. You know, as soon as the hot weather gets going again, here come the mosquitoes, and here it comes back again. And the other thing is that while we saw the, you know, the local zones, I mean, people are still traveling to these places, and the number of travel-related cases is not just in Broward and Dade and Palm Beach counties, but it is happening in New York and across the country. So this is a national issue that demands a national response, and it really was an embarrassment in public health response that we couldn't put the money and the urgency where it was needed, when it was needed, to try to put the lid on it.
Sammy, how will 2016 be remembered when it comes to the Zika response, especially as it comes to communication and transparency on the part of public health officials?
I think that depends on who you ask, right? So
I'll ask you as a health reporter.
As a health reporter, this is the year that that we learned just how tough it is to get a straight answer out of Tallahassee, I think. And I wish it wasn't the case. I would love for this to have worked better, especially as somebody who has a background in public health. The same rules apply for public health communications as they do for journalists. You want to be right, you want to be out there as soon as possible and as transparent as possible. And I feel like, and by the way, that is like in CDC recommendations for how to communicate.
The Centers for Disease Control
communications for how to communicate risk around an outbreak like this. And so I'm really hopeful that maybe there will be some lessons learned there.
Sammy Mack covered all of Zika for us here in 2016 for WLRN. And thank you so much, Sammy. Appreciate you coming
thank
in
you.
Here.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Also, let's talk about storms. 3,966 days. Remember that number, 3,966 days. That's how long Florida's no hurricane streak lasted between Wilma hitting South Florida in 2005 and Hermine hitting the Panhandle this past September. We avoided 68 Atlantic hurricanes before this year. The state saw two this year. Hurricane Matthew, of course, was the one that threatened us here in South Florida for several days. He was aiming toward our area, strengthened into a Category 4. This was a very serious storm if you take yourself back to those days of late September, early October. But he skirted just far enough offshore that South Florida was spared. There were some big gusts, certainly power outages, mostly concentrated in Palm Beach County. He saved his worst for Florida, though, for Daytona Beach and on north. Rosemary O'Hara, a bit of a fire drill, at least to remind us about how serious hurricane season is. How'd we do, first of all?
Well, I think we did well. I mean, it was an important fire drill. So many people have moved to Florida since 10 years ago that they didn't know how to, you know, what it is you need to do to get prepared. So we were so fortunate that, you know, that people did respond. The public health or public emergency mm-hmm. response reaction was appropriate. So I think as a fire drill, we did well.
Sergio Bustos, what about the governor's response here? He famously came out in the days before Hurricane Matthew at the State Emergency Operations Control, beseeching people, especially in the First Coast around the Jacksonville area, to leave, saying, you will die if you stay.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. After that, he then got into it became a political fight with the Tallahassee mayor, Andrew Gillum, who had been at the Democratic National Convention mm-hmm. as a speaker. And they got into a big fight over how they reconnected power to the city.
The response for Hermine after when it hit Tallahassee. Hermine. Yeah,
exactly. And so to me, it was just an unusual political fight in what typically, as you say, it's kind of a bipartisan, we're all in this together, let's get it through.
Yeah.
But, you know, Governor Scott really relishes the the spotlight in this, because he can go on, he goes on national TV. Mm-hmm. You know, there's talk of him maybe running for Senate in a couple of years. So all this kind of plays into a lot of attention for him. But again, it seemed like, you know, we dodged a big bullet, too. It wasn't as if these hurricanes were that destructive in terms of, you know, overall. But I know up north it was much worse than down here, but it could have been much worse.
Yeah, South Carolina certainly got the brunt of it. North Carolina. Amir Marquez with El Nuevo Herald. What was your assessment of the leadership response on the state level, but also the local level, to the threat that that Hurricane Matthew posed for us?
No, I think it was a good drill, and we did well. I always worry about people getting prepared and then nothing happening, and then the next time they won't.
Yeah.
And I think you know, the poor TV reporters get blamed, and I'm married to one, so I know. But you know, they get blamed for overhyping it, of course. And everyone's rushing, you know, to the lumber stores to buy the wood and everything else. But overall, we were, you know, for having not really paid much attention to this before. I also think that Governor Scott, I recall when Tampa had its Republican convention in 2004.
2012,
I think it was.
There
was a storm.
Right, it was a tropical storm. Ultimately.
I actually went and covered that, and I was on the editorial board for the Miami Herald, and went to a press conference that he was having. So that was, and you could tell he's really grown since then. That was like his. That was his first big
baptism,
one.
Yeah.
And I think that helped him to kind of make sure that you're prepared. I mean, you were seeing the storm, what it had done in the Caribbean before it came to us. There was good reason for him to say, get out or you're going to die.
It was devastating to Haiti, no doubt about it. Rosemary?
I just want to make one other quick point, and that is, even though it had been 10 years since we last had a hurricane, our insurance premiums have gone up every single year. And the reason they told us before that they went up every year is because of hurricanes. And my God, look at where we live. But, you know, if there is a public policy response that needs to come out of all of this from Governor Scott, do something about the cost of insurance. It's increasing more than 10% citizens this year.
Yep.
For people who have no other choices. Don't just get behind the microphone when the storm is coming and you can look good at the emergency operations center. Do something about the pocketbooks of all the people who are listening to this show and in Florida so that we can afford to live here. Insurance is through the roof, unjustifiably so.
Could be one of those last impacts that we see from the quiet decade that appears to be over for storms and for Florida. Rosemary O'Hara with the South Florida Sun Sentinel, Mary Marquez with El Nuevo, Sergio Bustos with Politico. Our 2016 look back will continue on the Florida Roundup, a presidential visit to Havana, and the death of a dictator. That's next.